You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red, Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red, Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're based at Galleon and Boyd. Big Red,
Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Yeah.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Welcome to the Big Red Copcast. I'm Pat.
And I am Joe.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can. Yeah, that's it.
You're Mountain Joe.
Mountain Joe. If you can, if you are on, this is probably one of the best times ever, at least for a different background, to be a Patreon subscriber, a Patreon what? Subscriber.
Oh, don't sell that too hard, because with working close to 80 hours a week and with Tweety being gone, it might not go
They're
up
not
on Patreon
up.
This week. I'm not going to lie. So, I mean, we will keep doing the video things. Don't get me wrong. Please donate to Patreon. There are plenty of other things you can get from it, and you will get the video things. There's a reason there have been like half the Wistrom Wednesday jokes every Wednesday compared to what there used to be, because it's amazing the difference between being an actor with no work and being the digital director for a news organization. My free time has diminished noticeably.
You're saying going from having all free time to not is essentially your transition.
There's something about being the lone digital person for a statewide news organization that goes 24 hours a day.
That's a good job, though.
It's a very unsustainable model when it comes to free time.
You need an assistant.
Yes. Oh, believe me, I am very much on board with that.
You should just have Emma be your assistant.
That's a person who, if there's anybody who works more than me, it's her.
It's her. Okay. Well.
I'm sure Tweety will dispute that.
And speaking of Tweety, he is MIA essentially. I mean,
yeah.
He told us a couple of weeks ago he was maybe traveling through Texas. We're not
yeah.
sure.
There's not a lot of, there hasn't been a lot of communication from that end lately. To be fair, we haven't pushed the issue either.
And if he's in Texas, he has no electricity, so it's hard for him to get in contact with us.
They have it back mostly now, don't they?
Except where Ryan is, I'm sure. Wherever Ryan is, based on his desire last week to be like, I'm moving out of California, I'm going to Texas where it's all at, as people are getting $12,000 electricity bills.
It's real fun. It's real fun to make fun of USC and UCLA and all that, but ultimately they're kind of like just a pimple on Husker fans' asses. Just a real tiny like thing that's there, but like to be a Husker fan in Austin, and there are a lot of them in Texas, I know, but like I just wonder is that going to be super annoying? Because I know he's among the class of Husker fans that like considers Texas about as reviled of team as there is in Huskerdom. I feel like there are others that are every bit as much, if not more so, but like there are a lot of Husker fans who think Texas is the devil. And I'm just like, why that? I wonder if that becomes difficult.
And it must be around people his age who were in, because there was a period of time when Texas and Nebraska were wrestling a little bit for at least some regional dominance. I'm old enough to still have although I'm maybe old enough to have had harbored a resentment against Oklahoma. And now I'm almost kind of like, oh, Oklahoma for the old days. Not quite, but there's a tinge of like, oh, I remember when that was a relevant thing to us. And it will be again. And is it next year we play Oklahoma or the year after we start?
Trying to remember when that series is. That's something I should know. It's just, you know, it's
coming up in the next couple of years.
Everything about like the Nebraska football schedule or just schedules in general just all feels so like with basically the lost year of everything, it's just hard to like, hey, was that this year that's coming up or is that next year? Like
the Ireland trip is canceled for good officially. Which we all kind of assumed, but why were they dragging it out?
Well, I think they wanted to be able to see if they could work it out. And probably there's a level of negotiating like exit strategies with contracts and stuff like that, because, you know, that was done through a pretty large travel corporation with the intention. I mean, because for a while, the only way you could get a ticket it was to buy one of the travel packages, which isn't worth it because like, A, you get no freedom as far as like the enjoyability of your travel. Because when I go places, it's not just that like I want to pick a cheap thing. I want to pick a thing that fits like the things I want to do and the type of place I want to stay. But then on top of that, that was expensive as hell.
I think it was tailored to the people Tweety hates who say sit down and don't make so much money.
I think you're exactly right. I think there was something to that. And by the way, it's September 18th of this year that we play at Norman,
Oklahoma. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking that because so
too bad Bookie Radley Hiles won't or whatever his name was Bookie won't be there to play against us.
I mean, I think it's probably all irrelevant at that point. Like, I mean, whether he's there, or whether he's not, I think we all have a pretty good idea of what that outcome is going to be. This has become the least Homer podcast ever lately. I feel like we've made a hard turn.
Well, I mean, how much more homering can you do right now?
None.
Well, we can if when we pivot into a couple other sports, which we can do right now if you want, and then get back to football, but.
Let's stay with football, then we'll get to the other stuff.
Okay. It's just been, you know, and especially without Tweety here, he will represent whatever the opposite way the wind is blowing in the podcast. So if you and I are a little bit morose and down, Tweety will come in and yell at us. Whereas if we, again, you and I are not always aligned against Tweety. It's just when logic's involved. But if he does often play the, if you and I are like positive, he'll come in with a undercutting negative take and to the opposite as well. So,
and then he gets very mad when people agree with you and me, but not him. He doesn't like that.
Again, of course, it's a problem with logic he has at times. And I can understand how that happens.
It looks like currently, so there was going to basically be an off week for that Ireland game because
move yourself to block the window there so you're not getting that light reflection. There we go. That's
I guess nice. I could just close this door too.
Oh, now you can move around all you want.
Yeah, I sit like sort of cocked off to one side because I am 6.5 feet tall and I don't fit under tables very well. It's a challenge. But yeah, it looks like we're still going to have that week off that was basically there so the team could get their legs back under them after coming back from Dublin. But so it's at Illinois, then 2 weeks later, home against Buffalo, against a guy with Nebraska ties, Lance Leipold, who's their coach.
Well, that school's long had some Nebraska ties. Turner Gill.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Forgot about that. I don't know how I could forget about that.
I mean, there are a number of schools, you know, I don't know if it's a tree exactly, but you look at, like, obviously Ohio, University of Ohio with Solich there. Also, I feel like the Dakota schools, just because they recruit so much, there's some, you know, there's Nebraska DNA going back and forth with that. And I think Buffalo, yeah, is another school that seems to have that.
Yeah, because, like, Lance Leipold coached at Doan and UNO, and he was actually... Oh. He was at
Nebraska for a little bit.
Yeah, well, he was at Nebraska for a little bit too. Yeah. But it says assistant on his Wikipedia, but I imagine that's got to be GA.
Yeah. And he's a Buffalo rather is, that's a good program in that lower tier. They're possible, you know, they've had good records over the past several years.
Yeah, that's a good place. Yeah. No, he's done well. Well, he was a Division III champion for a bunch of years at Wisconsin Whitewater. I mean, that's one of those where you're like, oh God, is that going to be the next Troy?
Right.
Where, like, right. You know, I mean, you don't ever want to lose to Troy, obviously, but that's a program with a lower tier program with some pedigree. Yeah.
That's the thing. You almost don't want to play them because the possibility is there, and the loss is worse than the win is good.
That'll be a thing. That'll be the moment where you're like, either it's weird to say this, but I feel like that'll be a moment where you can really tell, hey, is Nebraska like on the track back, or is that going to be the Northern Illinois game where suddenly there's just noise that you can no longer drown out? Because if Nebraska if they start out 2-0, and obviously no one will give them credit for drumming Buffalo, but if they come out and just look like the superior team, that'll be the moment where I'm like, okay, I feel good about where this thing is going finally. But if, you know, obviously if they lose or it's way too close, that'll be the moment where people are like, it's too loud.
And those games on the schedule for years have not come out in that way. What was the game when Abdullah had to basically rescue us
with McNeese that State. Run?
Yeah, I mean, we've had games
that's
like that.
That's an even worse one because that's FCS.
Right. And over, you know, that should be as big a sign as the close losses we've had and everything. We haven't had any of these easy wins, seemingly. Even our wins have been like fraught. Obviously there's probably one or two in there, but these early games on the schedule, that's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be 48-21 and you got your offense revving and you know, the game was never in question and blah, 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 blah. But doesn't seem to happen.
The only one I can truly think of, and I'm not including Bethune-Cookman for obvious reasons. The only one I can truly think of, and it's not a non-conference game, is Maryland. Like we beat up on Northern Illinois a couple years ago, but that was a really ugly game. Northern Illinois looked like crap. We just took advantage.
They lost it more, right?
They just made a million mistakes, and honestly, for all the mistakes they made, we should have beaten them by a lot more. But like the Maryland game, and Maryland sucked a couple years ago, but we did hang half a hundo on them and almost had the shutout till the very end. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
That one
that
was
might be
solid.
The best game. Is that the best game of the Frost?
That might be like, I was halfway impressed. I felt the game that made me feel like we were going to, really like that we really had it turned around was that first game against Iowa, his first game against Iowa at the end of his first year, or like, because we went toe to toe with them, but as far as like a two game stretch, probably the best one was that Maryland game followed by losing at the last second against Iowa, and really we had a chance to put that game away and just didn't.
You can apply that to four or five games. And again, I'm struck and reminded again by the first game of Frost's career at Nebraska. And just, you can't, you know, it's one of those butterfly effect things where you can't necessarily suggest we would, our record would be reversed of what it's been.
Yeah.
What, you know, but maybe.
But I do think it would have created a different vibe. Now, that's not to say it's guaranteed. Like, it would have been even worse if they would have come out and lost to Akron.
Yeah.
Which I don't think would have happened, but I mean, you can't say it wouldn't happen for sure, considering all that's happened.
You're absolutely right.
By the way, we start off with 3 of 4 on the road this year, by the way.
Wow. That is unusual for
Illinois, against Buffalo, at Oklahoma, at Michigan State. Because 2 of our...
That was supposed to be an Ireland game.
Well, the Illinois one, yeah. Because 2 of our 4 are conference games, you know.
Right.
Do we have some non-conference
later in the year?
We have one non-conference game later, yeah. So our home and home with the power conference team is Oklahoma, and that starts off at Norman. So it's just the perfect storm. But the fact that the Big Ten has starting off with our first 2 Big Ten games on the road is kind of weird, though, too. But yeah, we play Southeastern Louisiana, like in between Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Yeah, that could be a good.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. That's SEC style, baby.
Yes. Well, that's fine. If that's what we got to do, that's fine with me. So yeah, it's been so slow in football, like no recruiting. I just keep watching and players keep trickling into the portal from schools, which is kind of, I guess it's still going to happen. I just thought everybody might be in the portal by now. It just is weird how that's happening. And, you know, there's also a season of football taking place with players who I assume will be eligible to transfer and then play again next year.
Yeah. Are dudes still going to have to sit out a year?
I don't even know how they're working that, you know.
Yeah.
So many of these guys, with the year not counting last year, many guys probably got to graduate. And so you can always transfer. Everyone who's graduated can go. And then
there'll be a lot of grad transfers.
And during the pandemic, you're going to have, I think, and I actually think this is appropriate, going to have more family waivers that are granted, I think, because players, you know, what do we have, 5 guys this year, if you count the Florida guys and Wandell, who wanted to go closer to home for whatever reason.
I mean, honestly,
so I think that's also going to be a factor.
I mean, honestly, why wouldn't you? I mean, there's just, I mean, I know we've said it a million times, but it's not just Nebraska, but a lot of these college towns, like, why the hell would you want to be in Ann Arbor during the middle of, like,
if you're
why
not,
would you,
if,
why would you want to spend the start of your second semester in Ann Arbor, Michigan with like nothing to do because everyone's still locked up and to a certain extent, or if they're not,
don't know anybody. You're in a, yeah, I now this is, let's hope, fingers crossed, that this next season we're past all that, but this has been a crazy year, and it's not just gonna go away next year because you have a trickle effect. My daughter applied to a college this year, she's a senior. Or last year, but it's the same effect where you've got half the kids deferred last year because they didn't want to go to a school and pay whatever private school fee, tuition rather, and sit at home and do stuff. You know, smart kids would actually have done a year of community college last year, hopefully, if you graduated. This is easier said, but you know, like, do a year of community college, get those credits for like a 20th of the price, and then take your next 3 years out of college if you can.
Well, I mean, my wife is dealing with a bunch of students at Caltech, just spread out all across the globe.
Their
dream, you know, these are kids who have spent their entire lives studying their asses off so they could go to their dream school, Caltech, which, you know, they turned
probably
down.
I want to work for NASA.
Yeah. Well, they turned down full rides to places like Duke and all that to go, you know, be at this place that's like of a bunch of like-minded kids in like a dreamscape in Pasadena. And then now they still have to be like in Dallas or India or Seoul, South Korea or Finland, or which, you know, some of those places actually might be the better places to be, but, or their random home in Virginia, and they've all got to be, and then like, yeah, they don't get to be in labs, and you know, it's,
and the Caltech kids, yes. And the Caltech kids, while they probably are transitioning with the technology fine, kids could use some social interaction, probably even more than your average college student. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there, I mean, depending on the field too, like there's only so much you can get out of it's asynchronous learning.
It's collaborative work that they're doing, you know, NASA and all that. You look, there's 50 people in that room for the Mars rover, and they're all doing part of it. And yeah, just imagine multiplying 50 different screens into trying to collaborate that way. It's just, it's got to be treacherous. My daughter goes to a split high school, which is half like theater arts classes and then your regular curriculum. Like, they might as well skip the whole second half, because it's like, what are we going to do, an acting class? They did a Shakespeare play like through Zoom stuff.
Yeah.
The Tempest, I think. And it's like,
oh, man. That's not even my favorite one anyway.
How do you do a Shakespeare play where dialogue and everything is so important and it's going through Zoom?
Well, especially that one, because there are like so many like big sort of chorus kind of things with their big shipwreck scenes. Like,
right.
You kind of lose a lot there. But the point being, so it's not just football players, but football players, I mean, college athletes, there's a lot put on them. You need to be able to at least have a little bit of the fun parts of college. Because, you know, when I first started traveling as a play-by-play guy, I just remember thinking, good God, how do these kids do this and then still lace up their shoes and go practice and play? Because I'm exhausted just from all the travel. Did you freeze, Joe? Joe froze. We lost Joe. Oh, no. Well, we're getting close to being able to wrap up anyway. Oh, there you are. You're back.
Yeah. I was having the same thing. I heard you say Joe froze, but you were frozen on my end. So I was like, I don't know if anybody can hear me, but Pat froze.
Maybe it was me. Maybe it was me, because I just got your internet connection is unstable.
You're going to want to listen back to that part.
I'll find out when we edit here in a second.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to do in a second, because honestly, we said we were going to do this a half hour. We're pushing an hour. No, we're not.
We're not even at a half hour yet. We have a couple other things to cover.
That's fine. I thought we started
about 22 minutes.
I thought we started at 1 my time and not at 1:30.
We're at a sitcom length at this point. So
yeah. So what did we miss? Where did we go?
Well, football. You were talking about when you were in college, your first year of college.
Oh, no, not when I was in college, but when I was my first year as the play-by-play guy for a college team. And I just remember thinking, just based on the travel and all the schedule there, and like, I just remember thinking, man, I'm exhausted. I can only imagine the kids who are lacing them up for practice the day of the game. You know, they do a walkthrough, which is, you know, the caliber of a lot of high school practices, and then you play a game at night, and then you get on the road after the game, and go to the next place where you're going to play the next night and then do it again. And then you come back and then you have school the next week. Like, I'm like, what the heck? Like, being this it's crazy.
It's being a college at this point, a D1, probably even some of the bigger schools in the lower.
This was
level.
A D2
right.
that I was covering.
It's a double major. You're double major. It's your sport, which is your first, and then your second major is whatever your major is.
Yeah. You know? And that's if it doesn't conflict with right. like the schedule right. of your sport. Because there were I know the football team at one point at Wayne State they were basically just like, you can't be a broadcast major because their classes conflict with our practices. I'm like, yep. Well, that's gotta suck.
Especially when schools pitch certain programs to players as yeah. you being able to major in this because, you know, this is what you're interested in outside of football and this is the career that you might have outside of football. And then they don't tell you at that point that you can't take those classes. They just say they offer them at the school. And then when you get into the program is when they pull that shit on you, I'm sure.
Well, it probably depends on the coach and the program and the caliber of the yeah. program because, you know, because yeah. honestly, the worst thing you can do, I think, is recruit dishonestly because eventually they're going to get in and they're going to be unhappy. And
that happens, yes.
That doesn't make for a good locker room. I've traveled with student athletes who you can tell it was not the experience pitched to them. And some of it is just a kid not playing. They're going to be kind of disgruntled. But sometimes, too, you can tell there was some level of, if not dishonesty, just a little bit of sleight of hand. And they're terrible to be around. What's that?
Yeah. I think that happens a lot. And that's hence the portal.
Yeah.
You know, hence we have a whatever.
Well, and the higher ranked students. And the higher ranking you are, like at what school you are and, you know, what caliber and everything, you have more places to go from there. If you're at a Division II right. school and you've been misled and you're unhappy, like there's not as much from there. Like you may be able to go like parallel, or you may go down to like an NAIA or something, but like there's way more leverage for like a kid who maybe doesn't work out at Nebraska to be like, all right, well, I'm going to try the next tier of Division I school. And if that's not there, then there's also still plenty of Division II schools to offer scholarships. Anyway, yeah. I'm getting into the weeds here.
No, but that you're describing the process there. So I had to clean the screen off a little bit.
Doesn't yeah, look any different.
No, and really, quite frankly, I just moved the dirt around a little bit. but there's not much with football. We've kind of exhausted that. Except there was the one thing that I was saying.
What was the thing? Do you not remember?
It was about the volleyball program.
Oh,
how that's the most dominant. So Stanford, this is a transition. That Stanford just dropped out of the volleyball rankings for the first time, I think, since 1982, leaving Nebraska as the only team to be in the rankings every week since 1982, which I think.
And that's when they started the ranking.
Before we started. Yep. That you have to say not the money program at Nebraska, but the most consistently dominant program at Nebraska is volleyball, not football.
Yeah. Well, so if you, I'm just doing a little bit of math here. So like you would probably consider Nebraska to be dominant from 70 to 2001, maybe.
Yeah, that's fair. We were in a national championship game, whether we deserved it or not. And we had a Heisman Trophy quarterback that year. So
year before. Well, and so 70, we, you know, start showing up in national championship games. Maybe you could say a year or two prior to that.
I think a 40-year run at, you know, give, you know, 40-year run.
Well, that's 30, 31.
30-year run. I'm an idiot.
And so 30 then for volleyball would then be next year. So if you manage to just keep this thing rolling along for another couple of years. And the thing that John Cook has done that Tom Osborne didn't, and obviously Tom Osborne's success was largely because, you know, he kept a lot of continuity on his staff, but John Cook continues to hire incredible assistants and then send off his proteges to other universities to become head coaches and get experience there, which
he's got a great tree.
Yeah. Which if Frank Solich had gone off and, you know, taken his lumps at a mid-major school, right, and then come back to take over for Tom Osborne after Tom Osborne retired, perhaps that's a wholly different story, because Frank Solich was learning on the job at the premier program at the time. So I think there's a better chance for Nebraska volleyball, even after John Cook retires, to keep it humming along.
Somebody will come in to keep it going.
Yeah, because he's got three or four like big-time assistants. Yeah, he's got three or four big-time assistants who have been like making Final Fours and stuff, who are like Big Ten coaches. He's got like Danny Busboom, who's a Nebraska native, who played at Nebraska, who's, you know, taken Louisville to NCAA tournaments all the time. Like, there will be someone to keep this ball rolling at Nebraska and who will be glad to do it. And Nebraska will probably pay them better than any other volleyball program will be able to.
And you know, it's like what Nick Saban does with his coaches, except his coaches are never successful after they become head coaches after that. So, you know, it's the actuality of what Nick Saban is supposedly doing with his tree.
Well, Nick Saban just keeps hiring already established coaches who maybe like suddenly fell off the turnip truck and now have bruises, and he's just kind of rehabilitating their image. Like, Steve Sarkisian was never a bad coach. Yeah. He just got hammered and went to a pep rally.
At least that's what he got caught doing. He was probably drunk more than that, but, and now he's got the Texas job. But I don't know. I just don't, if I'm a SEC school, especially, I do not hire a Saban assistant, because I think the statistics are in on that one, and it ain't a good idea.
Very true.
Absolutely. I think you're better off getting that Mike Leach, just because, and he's a whole other ball of wax, but I think you're bringing in something outside of, you know, the SEC to me is so unimaginative. Every team, if they could, would bludgeon you with 55 runs, you know, like the way Alabama did 4 or 5 years ago. That's what they want to do. Now, their offense,
which if you have
picked up,
if you have superior talent, then go ahead.
That's what Nebraska did in their glory days. And it's what Alabama did before their offense transitioned and everything. And that's really every SEC coach wishes they could just play 1971 Bear Bryant football. And I think that's just in that system. So for the SEC, I think you got to bring people outside of that.
So if you're a Mississippi State or a Vanderbilt or a Kentucky, you really have to, for lack of a better term, think outside the box. Like, because you're not, like, if you're a Florida or an Alabama, you know.
Even in Auburn.
Yeah.
LSU.
And sometimes Tennessee, but ultimately.
Georgia.
Tennessee is to the SEC what Nebraska is to the Big Ten right now. Just kind of
thinks it, as much. Yeah.
Thinks it's a little more than
ahead,
what it is.
It.
Oh no. It's been, like, but,
and well, they're less than we are.
Yeah, absolutely. But so like, if you have the pedigree and the, you know, we don't have Tweety here, so I'll say it, but like the Bagman infrastructure that allows for the securing of premier talent, then you can do it a certain way. But like, come on, like,
yeah,
Nashville's a wonderful town, but Vanderbilt's not pulling that off.
And Tweety talks about Bagman as the only way out. The problem with a school like Nebraska is, you know, you might be able to do that with Gene Chizik at Auburn for 1 year, but then he's fired the program. Like, I just think if you were to do that at Nebraska, you might get a 1 year pop out of it, but it wouldn't have the same benefit as the SEC, where you can almost kind of make that your, like you were saying, the infrastructure. I feel like at a school like Nebraska running,
and there
it that
is
way,
an infrastructure for pulling that off.
Absolutely. But it would look like the Mississippi, Ole Miss classes.
I meant to say that there's a need for an infrastructure. We don't have it.
No. And that's the thing. And I think if we tried this Tweety Bagman philosophy, it would be like kind of those Ole Miss classes where they had like, oh, the number one defensive end, the number one tackle, the number two tackle. Like they've paid $450,000 and it's got like, there's no way you can look at it and go, they're not paying these guys. And I feel like if we were to jump into that, it would become such an obvious thing, almost like it was at SMU, where it's like SMU kind of, and now suddenly they're so great and it's just so obvious. So
yeah,
I think it's harder for a school like us to pull that kind of shit.
Now, I will say this. You said it would
on
probably...
On the big scale, SEC style.
You said it would probably create like a one-year pop and then like come back down to earth. Would we take the one-year pop right now?
Well, do you take the one-year pop if it comes along with sanctions? Now, honestly, the NCAA
no.
sanctions have been so weak. You know, but I feel like the way Nebraska's gone, that for some reason they're going to come heavy on Nebraska. Like, oh, we'll make a lesson out of Nebraska. You know,
yeah.
What I mean?
The USC
the Big
one
Ten will
was...
be like, yeah, get them.
Yeah, the USC one was fairly harsh, and even being in a recruiting hotbed, like they haven't yeah. really had a true rebound. Like they've had some solid
yeah,
moments,
right.
but. No, so, I mean,
that,
I don't know.
That program is like Texas, where I think those programs are more of a surprise for their failures than ours. And maybe their
yeah.
failures haven't been as great, but they have less excuses.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
so, yeah.
The
volleyball
guy
actually brought out more of our football talk than anything else. I'm sorry, Pat, go ahead.
No. We just have a slight delay here, so I apologize. I keep stepping on you. Why can't I think of the name of the former AD at Texas? He was just terrible. So terrible. And it's why I could never understand. So like why Shaka Smart decided of all places to go to Texas, because he had, but like, they didn't really offer him any more money than some other places. It's I don't know. Like that one. That
and
one,
in basketball, you don't have to. You don't have to go to Texas.
No,
I think in football, it makes sense to go to a program with that much money and resources. But you're right.
Yeah.
At VCU, you can get to the Final Four, and because you've got 12 guys, and you really need seven who are premium, perhaps, especially for a small school where you have a smaller lineup. And so you're right. Now the money that he got, I guess he could have gotten at a few other places. But we're talking this out right now, it doesn't make as much sense for a basketball
coach
to need those resources.
I think he thought there was a lot of untapped talent, like big time talent in Texas, and there is a surprising amount.
That was only
a few
years after Durant, like.
Yeah, well,
there.
Durant though is from Maryland.
Yeah, that was a weird. I mean, that's probably a little.
Yeah, but like
boosting.
There is a surprising amount of basketball talent in Texas. That's where Shaq's from, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was Louisiana. Oh, the Texas. Yeah, he's from the Texas-Louisiana border area, I believe, isn't he?
Yeah.
Or the Houston area.
That sounds right. But no,
even San Antonio, actually. His dad was a military guy, I believe.
And, you know, that obviously means a person's not really from anywhere.
Right. And also, when you're a big-time basketball player these days, you're also not from anywhere, it seems like.
Yeah, the best basketball prospect in Nebraska history to this point, Hunter Salas, is probably going to end up at Kentucky or Duke or North Carolina, one of those. I mean,
which is funny because we got a five-star this year, but it's not the guy from Nebraska.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
I mean, it works for me. I like McGowan's as a prospect a little bit better.
Oh, sure. But Salas got a McDonald's All-American.
That's not surprising. I mean, he's a five-star.
Yeah. Yeah. And then who they pick. It's always weird who they pick. That.
What's that?
So I don't want to get on a McDonald's All-American.
By the way, Shaq's high school was Robert G. Cole in San Antonio. But prior to that, Fulda American in Fulda, Germany.
whoa.
Yeah. You weren't kidding about the military thing.
Yeah. And I bet the competition at that base wasn't really all that good.
Well, Nebraska had a football player a few years back from who came from an Air Force base family. Isaiah Flewellen. I remember when he was recruited, his like hometown was listed as Ramstein, Germany.
Oh my goodness.
But then his brother Silas played at Bellevue West in Omaha and then went to Wayne State and was like a Division II All-American there as a quarterback.
Oh, isn't Ramstein, isn't that the team you root for? No, that's Burford Winter, whatever.
Werder Bremen.
Werder Bremen.
Oh, I'm unfamiliar with any Ramstein German teams. There are none in the top level anyway.
No, well, I'm sure there's a team there, though. So we talked – oh, basketball you wanted to mention. We kind of got into basketball a little bit.
I mean,
anything
it's
about
not –
our big win at Minnesota?
Well, at home on senior night, I love Thor, man. Thor, like, I wish we could have had, like, one really good year for Thor. Like, that dude, he's great. He's just hard not to like.
And is he from – he's from Nebraska?
No, he's from Iceland. The guy with the name Thorir Thor Bjarnason, you thought he was from Nebraska?
Heinrich Harburg.
Fair point. Fair counterpoint.
I think, you know, any Nordic name could be from Iceland or Nebraska at this point.
Yeah, the only regular on the roster, the only dude who played in Nebraska high school is Teddy Allen. But he went to Boys Town, which they get dudes from all over the country.
All over, sure.
But he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Nebraska, he went to West Virginia, and
Stanford,
kind of got nudged out of there, and then went to Wichita State, and then got forcefully nudged out of there before Jesus. He ever played a game.
But listen, I mean, the coaches he's going to West Virginia with freaking what's his name, Huggins,
Huggy Bear, yeah.
And then he goes to Wichita State with, like, you know,
Marshall.
Like, he must think Hoiberg is like the kindest person in the world.
I don't know what the Western Nebraska Community College coach was like. I mean, they seem
tell you, he wasn't as big a dick as Marshall, guaranteed. And he almost 99% wasn't as big a dick as Huggins.
Oh, I guarantee. Yeah. I mean, to have that sort of reclamation project, to be the guy who does those reclamation projects, there's got to be a little bit of like tough love, but love, like you don't just get to be a dick to dudes who have gone through some shit and have, you know, in the case of Teddy Allen, probably inflicted some shit too. But like to get the best out of humans who have maybe not been at their best, there's a calculus.
You gotta be a psychologist. There's a nuance and stuff, and that's what the great coaches are able to do. And it's why coaches like Bobby Knight, Greg Marshall are washing out a little more, because their psychology is the psychology of dominance and not really the psychology of psychology.
It's a dated psychology that worked for an era, but does not anymore. Like Krzyzewski, like, knows kind of at times how and when to take the foot off the gas pedal. But and this year, it's been a struggle for him at times. Like he is not, even though he played under Bobby Knight, he's not Bobby Knight.
No. No, he has that background and he can reference it, and, you know, I bet he gets gruff and everything. But yeah, and Bobby Knight, and he coached Bobby Knight coached him at the military institute at West Point, where you also have a certain level of personal aggression and violation of human rights that is kind of allowed as a baseline way of doing things.
Yeah,
there's a different kind of psychology.
to be Bobby Knight at West Point and to be Bobby Knight at like any Texas other Tech. Liberal arts school, it's a whole different ball of wax. There's a far more level of there's a greater level of acceptance of that type of behavior at West Point, as you just said. I'm just repeating what you just said, but yeah,
it's true.
And then like
everyone knows that the Army, like that's basic Army fundamentals of break down the individual.
Yeah.
Like that is, I'm not saying anything that's thousands of years old. And it's often been applied to sports, less so now than it was 15, 20 years ago. Again, Bear Bryant, no water at practice, you know, like Bobby Knight, shit like that is, you know, human rights have raised up a little bit in the sports world, which is good.
Well, and I think too, so everyone was basically behaving and performing that way. And people realize at a certain point that like there are certain scientific things that allow for like greater performance and certain things that detract from that. And like knowing when to put your foot on the gas pedal and when to take it off, that creates better performance. And that like Bear Bryant being like no water during practice, while that might have some sort of like, oh, I'm tough psychologically now, it's not going to help the physical. Like if you were to do that to like a peak level performing athlete at LSU, you would detract from his physical performance.
Yes. But again, I think that's a different thing now. You know, at that time, imparting your will over somebody was what the main thing was. You wanted to do it to your players, and you wanted them to do it to the other team.
Because basically players are topping out physically now. Like no one was close to achieving peak physical condition at that point because there wasn't the sports science into things. So the psychology of that was a lot more important. Like, you know, basically viewing it from a militaristic standpoint, there was a level of importance to that. But now, like, you can't get by with that because, like, again,
the game's too sophisticated.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you can't, again, we were talking about the old school SEC way of, you know, grinding out and pounding the other team. There's just too many ways to beat that now.
Yeah.
You can't just depend on that.
It's why, I hate to reference the guy, but it's why Art Briles made his offense the way he did, because he was at a school that was at a high school that was physically inferior to others. But he knew he was never going to be able to win with an old style of football. So he just had to find a way around that. And that's, sport is always about that. It's about like figuring, okay, well, this new trend has happened. How do we beat that?
And that's just one of the ways Art Briles.
I think our feeds were off.
Yeah. I was going to say Art Briles also did a few other things.
Oh yes,
outside the lines to equal things out, so to speak.
Yeah, equal things out for his team versus another team. Maybe not for perpetrator versus victim.
Humanity, he did bad things for.
Correct. So, yeah, it's kind of a more general NCAA podcast today, but you know,
I agree. We got into some topics that were vast, have a little bit of implication, but probably outside our normal thing. And again, sometimes we have to admit that we miss Tweety, because he would have provided at least more yelling, which a lot of our listeners like.
Probably more ejaculate talk as well.
Typical. Yeah.
I gotta say, that is, one piece of feedback from my dad, too much talk of ejaculate when Tweety's on the podcast.
I think Tweety probably takes the podcast's rating up one level.
So as far as like a parental guidance thing. Yeah.
Yes. If you and I do a PG-13, you add Tweety in, it may actually jump twice. And he'll get you up to the X level.
Yeah, the Cobcast will be on Pornhub before we know it.
Yes. Well, you know what? If it's a revenue stream, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, whoever wants to host us to get us more listeners, I'm all for it.
I will say, a long time ago when I first moved to LA, my wife and I did a video, which was, you're getting there, but it was like completely honest first date. I did these completely honest videos. So it was just she and I on a date, completely
I've
honest
I've been
first
in those
date,
with you. Ends,
yes, right. Yes, of course. The coach, the recruiter. And so it ends with a hand job joke. And it had like 50,000 views, but like somehow it had gotten put on like a Norwegian porn site or something. And because it ended with a hand, like it was getting views on like some kind of like porn site, but views are views.
You get what you can get.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, man,
there's something to think about. If Tweety hears this, we may be going in a different direction.
So
my computer's about to die too. So we should probably find a way.
I know what the description of this podcast is going to be now. When I publish this, but yes, your computer's about to die. You got to hit the road soon and I got to edit this thing. So let's wrap all it right. up. Follow yep. us on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast. We're on Facebook.com/Cobcast. Go to Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast and throw in a couple bucks, even if this particular one isn't on the video. Anything else, Joe?
Just Fatty Rides the Bus.
Fatty Rides the Bus.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardwalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at HuskerFilm.com.